All right, we are live right now, guys. It is the TD Mastermind call, and we have none other than Larry Indaviglia and Frank Pucher giving us their talk today that they've been working diligently on, Lessons from the Last Century. And we've got 16 months and 100 clients. And Frank has been talking about this call for months now, and for the several years that I've known Frank, one of his intentions was to share what he's doing at his business, on all that he's doing back there, Fitness One-to-One. He's got so many programs and services, I think, that all of us can benefit from. So in just a moment, Larry and Frank are going to do the call. They're going to be conducting it, but I did want to make a couple announcements first. Realize in the next month or so, we have several things coming up. Each of the groups will be meeting in their little pods, so to speak. I know, Larry, your group on September 24th and 25th and 26th is going to be meeting back there at Frank Pucher's place. Guys, if you're in Larry's group, do your best to attend that. Even if you get 4, 5, 6, 7 people, whatever it is, a mini mastermind for a couple of days would be awesome. So why don't you communicate directly to Frank and or Larry about that? But it would be great to have a copy up at Larry's or at Frank's. If you're in Larry's group. At the same weekend, my group will be meeting out here at Laguna Beach at Vito LaFada's place on September 24th, 25th. So we'll be having mastermind meetings on both coasts, which will be really, really cool. It's going to be awesome. And then on October 1st and 3rd, Troy's group is getting together in Vegas. I'm not sure what kind of meeting they're going to have in Vegas, but it is going to be in Vegas. No, it's going to be at Michael Abosco's place over there in Vegas, and they've got an awesome itinerary all set for the October 1st to the 3rd. So just a few things happening in the Mastermind group right now with that. If you can attend one of those, it's always so great live to attend one of those. So if you can be there, awesome. If you can't be there, then we'll do the best to get you as much information out as we can. But I know that Troy and Abosco and Frank and Larry and Vito are all putting a lot of time into their meetings for this, and it's going to be a great way to expand just that weekend and those weekends, all of the Mastermind concepts. So that was the big announcements I want to make is do your best to be at those meetings, and it's going to be some great masterminding. Without further ado, I want to turn it over to Frank and Larry, and it's really going to be exciting to listen to this, Lessons from the Last Century and that stuff. And Larry, Frank, the show is all yours. Take it and run with it, and enjoy the call, guys. Peace and love.
Okay, Todd. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for the intro. Fantastic.
Okay, everybody is on the line. We got a rocking and rolling great call today. And what we're going to do is kick it off with a couple of things. The genesis of this call came from a lot of discussion and a lot of hard work that's been going on at Fitness One-to-One. And for the most part, I think what we're going to do is cover 11 or so lessons that Frank has pretty much developed over the past 16 months in his effort to take his business to another level, and he has done that. So what I'm going to do is basically introduce a little bit of biographical information on Frank. Frank, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, Larry, you do have a slight echo in the background.
Slight echo in the background, okay. Let me make sure that that's eliminated. And hopefully that'll help. Is it still there, Frank, or you're all right?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. All right, let's kick it off, folks. What we're going to do is I'll go a little bit of a biographical sketch on Frank, and I want to welcome Frank to the call. Frank Pucher's had an 18-year fitness career, and then some. And basically he started off, he attended Don Bosco Prep High School in Ramsey, New Jersey.
Don Bosco, baby!
And it's a very, very, very competitive and top-flight athletic school, all athletes, all sports there, just top-notch, not only in New Jersey, but nationally, okay? He was part of two state championship track teams, and he was named the team's MVP his senior year. So he just got better every year there. Upon graduation from Don Bosco, Frank attended East Stroudsburg University in Pennsylvania, where he was a two-time all-conference track runner. And in 1992, graduated from East Stroudsburg. So Frank has been running is in his blood. He's been a competitive runner all his life and really enjoys that. Upon graduation from Stroudsburg, he was hired by SPA at Glen Point in Teaneck, New Jersey, as a fitness instructor. And shortly after that, as a personal trainer at Fitness 1-to-1 in Englewood, New Jersey. It was located in Englewood, New Jersey in 1993. And because of his performance there, he was offered a management position at the yet-to-be-open Fitness 1-to-1 in Livingston, which was a different location, apparently, than the Englewood location. But all said and done, he started there for a couple of years, then went off and actually created Personal Fitness Training, which was an in-home training business. So Frank, the entrepreneur that he is, went to start fitness Personal Fitness Training, did that for a little bit, and then was able to put himself in position July 1st, 1998, purchased Fitness 1-to-1 in Livingston, New Jersey. That was 1998, so over 12 years ago. And recently relocated and Fitness 1-to-1 to Roseland, New Jersey in May of 2008. So 10 years at one location, and then he upgraded and shifted locations, and we may talk about that a little bit. And that's where he is today. Think about Fitness 1-to-1. It has recently been voted as the best exercise studio by New Jersey Monthly Magazine in New Jersey, which is a great, great accolade. Frank also personally oversees 9 fitness professionals with his wife, Francesca, okay, and also his brother, Gary. Okay, that's kind of the brain trust at Fitness 1-to-1 there in Roseland. As a hobby, if I'll call it a hobby, Frank is an Ironman, finished the Ironman Triathlon in Lake Placid last summer in 2009. So he is an elite athlete as far as I'm concerned, anybody who has done that. He's run multiple marathons, at least 8 of those, and has plans to do more. Multiple certifications, and recently working on his own personal brand and spreading and also strengthening his brand of Fitness 1-to-1, addressing the New Jersey alumni of the Wharton Business School, which is a very, very prestigious group there back in New Jersey. I would be amiss if I didn't mention Corona, the yellow Labrador, which Frank and Francesca adore, and that's a little bit of a biographical sketch on Frank Pucher. So, Frank, certainly a great body of work and a great, great personal sketch here. I commend you on all of that. Guys, what I'm going to do is, just to kind of get to know Frank a little bit, I have a few questions, and it's going to be some short answers that Frank's going to respond to so we get to know him a little better and what he's about, because he is one of the, as far as I'm concerned, influential people in the fitness business today. Based on what he's done at Fitness 1-to-1 and also what he's doing in other areas of the fitness world. So, again, the title today is Lessons from the Last Century, 16 Months and 100 Clients. Frank, you know, we all kind of look at our days, how we set up our days. What is your favorite time of the day and why? What's your favorite time of the day and why, if somebody were to ask you that, which we're doing right now?
Well, first of all, Larry, I just want to quickly say thank you for the introduction and thanks to Todd for this opportunity. My favorite time of the day would probably be the evening. I'm more of a reflective person than a planner, and the evening would be an opportunity to really absorb the day, you know, and see see how the day went. And also, it's a quiet time. I spend much of my day focusing on other people's needs, other people's goals and concerns, and it's really an opportunity for me to kind of come home, unwind, spend some time with Francesca. Usually I have a little ritual where I'll open a bottle of wine, put on some music, sit in the living room, and spend some time just kind of relaxing and decompressing. That would probably be my favorite time of the day.
Interesting. That's great, Frank. As part of that, and certainly I don't, everybody maybe is a little different that day, do you do any planning at night after you kind of wind down for the next day, or is that done before you actually do your wind down at home?
Great question. What I do is before I leave the office each evening, I'll usually I still use the journaling book that you gave me close to a year ago. And what I do is I write out my client list for the following day, and I will look back on some notes from what I did with that client previously and lay out at least an outline of what I'd like to accomplish with Larry tomorrow at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. or whatever. So I'll usually do a little bit of client planning before I leave the office. I will write out a couple of intentions for the following day, maybe a couple of little motivational quotes, or maybe with a line from a song, something that I want to kind of either reflect on tomorrow or something that is bouncing around in my head, an idea. But no, once I get home, I try, not always successful, but I try to start to disconnect from work a little bit. In the past, that's been something I struggled with, but I really found great value in making my work time count and making my home time count as well.
Excellent. Excellent. Great, great. Frank, we talked about this before and also with the group. All leaders are readers. All leaders are readers. And if I can kind of pin you down, what are your top two or three books, let's say favorite books that you've read, and what are you presently reading today?
I'll give you three.
Mm-hmm.
The first one would be Focal Point by Brian Tracy. I think it's a must-read for anybody who's seeking greater efficiency in their lives or even their career. And the next book would be maybe a little unconventional, but called Inside the Magic Kingdom, the 7 Keys to Disney Success. And don't quote me, but I believe the author's name is Tom Connellan. I'm not exactly sure of the spelling of his last name. I think it's C-O-N-N-E-L-L-A-N, something like that. But it really talks about the importance of the little things and the attention to detail, the importance of customer service, and the very powerful power of perception.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Probably the third one. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Frank. And then it's interesting when I listen to some people people's favorite books and reads. How did you actually find these books? Were they recommended by a mentor possibly, or is it something that you just kind of stumbled on?
The Brian Tracy book was just in that vernacular of what I was reading at the time. I was reading a lot of Harvey McKay, and I probably had picked up another Brian Tracy book previously. So if I find an author that resonates with me, I'll try to pick up some of their other works. I probably stumbled upon Tracy's book through the evolution of what I was into at the time. And the Disney book, I want to say I was probably on my way to Walt Disney World on vacation, and
mm-hmm.
I was in the airport, and it was one of the books on the shelf. And
interesting.
Yeah, I had no idea what was in store for me, but I think fate and circumstance just landed that in my carry-on, and I read that while I was away.
Wow, that's multitasking at its best. All right, super. So we got Focal Point by Tracy and then Inside the Magic Kingdom by Colin. Wonderful. Frank, who do you look up to in the fitness industry? There might be multiple people here. Who do you look up to in the fitness industry since that's been your career certainly of choice and something you're passionate about?
I don't know if there's somebody that I look up to, but I'll rephrase that and say there's many people whose work I admire. I think Todd, obviously, and I'm not trying to be a homer here, but
right.
I think Todd, obviously his contributions to our industry are immeasurable. And I think maybe somebody like a Mark Verstegen. But I learn from a lot of people, Larry. I admire the works of a lot of people. I think anybody that does what we do and does it from their heart and does it for the right reasons, I admire those people. But I will say that the person that I perhaps most look forward to listening to and the person that for me just resonates the most with what's inside of me is probably J.C. Santana.
Mm-hmm.
He just speaks my language or vice versa. But there's just something about J.C. that and he's a more mature gentleman than I am. But I just say, and he's got it. Like, yes, you're talking my language. So there's something about JC that perhaps maybe puts him a step above everybody else, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're in a lot of company on that one too. Certainly one of the pioneers of our business, Frank. You know, this was just kind of a little offbeat question, and I was like, I'm always interested to see how people respond. Favorite movie, if you had to pick one.
Remember the Titans.
Why?
I think what it, the lesson that I always draw from that is that that which unites us is greater than that which divides us. And full disclosure, you know, that scene when Julius came into the hospital room and Gary told the nurse that was his, but I still cry like a baby every time I see that scene. You know, I have a high pain threshold, but I see that movie and that scene and I just, you know, I just cry.
Wow. Powerful movie.
Powerful.
Definitely. Definitely. Along the same lines, Frank, I don't know if you use your iPod at all when you're running or at any other times for relaxation. If you do, what's on it? What do you generally listen to? Top one or two, maybe either music groups or type of music?
Wow. I have a very, very diverse playlist. I'll say this. Everything is welcome on my playlist except Justin Bieber. It was officially declared a Bieber-free zone. My musical interest range, I mean, I have everything on there from Rihanna to Journey to Don Henley. I probably have a special affection for 80s rock bands. But currently I like the stuff from Nickelback and Daughtry.
Got it. Cool. Okay. My idea of relaxation is fill in the blank. My idea of relaxation is fill in the blank.
No alarm clock. No television. And spending time outside laughing with my family and friends.
Like that. Favorite word or words? And I know if I put words plural on that, we may be here for an hour. Favorite word or words? Give me three. Give me three, Frank.
My favorite word is excellence. And let me be clear. My definition, the people at Webster's may disagree, but my definition of excellence is the willingness to do and be the very best that we are capable of in any moment, in any day, in any event. Excellence, that's been my favorite word for a long time. I will say over the last 2 years, I've developed a strong appreciation for the word great, and we could talk about that probably for hours.
Right.
But I also like the word greatness. And for me, you know, we've kicked that around a little bit, Larry, but my definition of greatness is the consistent performance of the fundamental. If you look at sports teams and they say, well, they're a great team, it's we get great, whether it's a business, a sports team, or anything, we get great not by doing – well, we get great by doing the fundamentals consistently, not by doing the exceptional infrequently. So I'm a big believer in consistency. And obviously, the performance of the fundamentals is essential for greatness.
Wow. So that's powerful. It's almost one leads to the other. The focus on excellence, in many respects, will lead you on the path to greatness. Super, super two powerful ones, Frank. Frank, this one's real quick, and I know it's a tough one. If you had to describe your 14 years experience with Fitness One-to-One, your business, in one sentence, how would you describe that?
I know you had a hard time to smile by asking me to answer anything in one sentence.
I'm putting you on the spot on this one, Pook. I'm putting you on the spot.
It's been a continuing series of lessons in service, patience, humility, honesty, and integrity, and that has helped me to evolve as a coach, as a leader, a husband, a brother, and probably as a man.
Well, I think you've got it covered, Frank. Powerful, powerful, succinct, and there's some content in that. Thank you. Frank, you've been an athlete, and I think you're somewhat of a sports fan. I know people from the Garden State keep track of these things, having grown up back east many years ago. Favorite all-time sports moment, it could be you as a participant or maybe you as a fan. It could be either.
Well, I'll say as a sports fan, even though I'm a Dolphins fan, I'll probably say probably the Giants beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl. That Tyree catch was incredible. They'll be showing that for years, along with the Scott Norwood missed field goal. The Giants are my NFC team.
Mm-hmm.
But probably on a personal level, my favorite sports moment, and I think you and I have probably spoken about this in the past, was probably being in the water about a minute before the cannon sounded at the start of Iron Man. And it was at that moment that it really kind of hit me what was about to happen or the journey I'd been on. Without going too long on this, because this may rear its head later, but Ironman took me just under 14 hours to complete, but it took me 22 years to get to the starting line. It was something I started talking about and thinking about when I was 18 years old, and looking back now, with hindsight, it was excuses and fear which kept me from getting to the starting line. And when I was sitting in that water with my wetsuit on and my, 1,500 people around me waiting for that cannon to sound, I knew at that point that I would finish because I realized that after 22 years, there was nothing that was going to prevent me from crossing that finish line at this point.
That's powerful. It's almost like the victory was at the beginning. Wow.
Well, it's always the journey. It's not the destination.
Your ultimate mellow yellow destination. Frank, I know you guys go to Florida a lot, but if you had ultimate mellow yellow destination, what is it?
Naples, Florida. I have been going down there to turn off for the last 12 years, and I have my own little ritual when I go down there. Obviously, no alarm clock. I walk down to my little Starbucks and we'll read the newspaper for about an hour or two, go for a run, sit by the pool or sit on the beach and read, and I'll do that until it's time to go watch the sunset. I go down there. I have as great a time going down there now as I did my first time, and I'll say that I've had many aha moments watching the sunset and sitting on the beaches down there.
Wow. Nice. Frank, the next one, and this is the last one, we won't spend too much time with it, but just a lot of times in our teleseminar course, we talk about days, how a person starts their day, finishes their day. Just in a nutshell, if you can just kind of give us the highlight, your weekly design, especially in our business, people sometimes can work 7 days a week, and we certainly don't endorse that, but your weekly design, I know you've made some adjustments lately on that. Take us through just a Monday through Sunday, just to highlight, how your weekly design is, what you normally, approach your working week, and if you will.
Monday through Friday, I wake up at 5 a.m. every day. I still wake up early on Wednesday, and I'll address that in a moment, but Monday through Friday, I wake up at 5. I have a 6 a.m. client just about every day. I'll usually train several appointments back-to-back in the morning, get a little break where I'll go do a little workout, come back, shower, train a couple of clients lunchtime or early afternoon. And then the later part of the afternoon is usually a little bit more administrative or paperwork-oriented, working on client programs. I'll try to make it home every night by about 6 or 6:30. On Wednesdays, probably started about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I dedicated to being just blue sky day, just a day where I don't train clients on Wednesdays anymore. I spend that day just to kind of think about my business. And some people may view that as a waste of time, but if you think about it, I run a business, I've got 9 people, I've got a payroll, I've got rent and expenses and loans and all that fun stuff. and you know, I justify it by saying I spend 4 days a month thinking about that. So it
mm-hmm.
actually sounds enough time. And, you know, I think I try to make clear the whole day for that. And I will do a little workout and, you know, try to take care of myself on that day as well. But Saturday and Sunday, Saturday I usually train a client or two. You know, I'll come in around 8 o'clock. I'll stay around the gym till about 12, do a short little workout. And Saturday is red tape time for Francesca and I in the afternoon. You know, for some reason it's just the two of us in Corona, but we seem to end up at Costco an awful lot. And so we're running out to the stores. We're taking care of our personal errands, the dry cleaners, and that sort of thing. Friday or Saturday night, we'll usually go out to dinner with some friends. And Sunday is the only day of the week that I do not set an alarm clock. And I'll usually get up, check some emails, sip some coffee, and I'll go to Central. I go to Central Park a fair amount, and I'll do a couple of loops there, maybe walk around and grab some lunch or a late breakfast over there. But Sunday is kind of like my mellow yellow day, and Saturday is a little bit of work and a little bit of personal responsibility thing. But the rest of my week is primarily just focused on clients and business.
Got it. Well, it's good. You got a little bit of everything, man. It sounds like you certainly have secured some time for personal time, certainly, and then being a business owner. Certainly involved in a lot of things and associated with one-to-one. Thanks for all those, Frank. It was good. We got a little bit of insight as to who you are. Now, in the lessons that are about to go in, some specific on you as far as your role on Fitness One-to-One. You kind of say CEO. I'm a creative, energetic optimist for Fitness One-to-One. If you can just you're a business owner, you do some training there. How could you describe your role at Fitness One-to-One, just basically? Okay, what does Frank do for Fitness One-to-One?
I've wrestled for a while with trying to find that perfect title. But I think what I do, just in the raw sense, is I'm a lead by example guy. I still come in 6 a.m. I train clients. I answer the phone. I clean the equipment. I'll fold towels. I'll stock inventory as needed. And I say hello and greet each and every client when they walk in the morning. I may be the CEO, the creative, energetic optimist. But in a small business, Larry, there is no ivory tower. A small business owner at a studio needs to have their hands or at least their fingers on the pulse of everything. I joke about it. I said, I may be the wizard behind the curtain, but you'll still see me in the trenches every day.
Nice. As far as your footprint, Frank, just I've been at your facility. It's a fabulous place in Roseland, New Jersey. Just a quick snapshot of what I'm looking at. Are we in a business park? Are we in a strip shopping center? Are we looking at 5,000 square feet? Just a quick snapshot to folks who haven't been to Roseland.
We are in a professional corporate building that houses some elite law firms and accounting practices. We operate out of a 5,000 square foot print in the lobby. It is a magnificent building, a magnificent development. And it's a very open floor print. We have obviously phenomenal equipment. We have, but we have a lot of open floor space, and we designed it that way intentionally for a number of reasons, which we may get into later on with regard to
right. The
style of training that we do.
And you've got plenty of parking, I assume. I say that because sometimes that's a big issue, man. Well, sometimes it is.
There is no perfect facility, but. We have parking for about 1,000 vehicles.
Wow.
Yeah,
super.
The exterior and the building structure that we're in couldn't be better in that sense. We have great parking. The only thing that we do lack is we are a destination business by far. We are not a retail. So you're finding us because you're looking for us. You've been referred to us. Nobody's driving down the street and going to assume that we're in here.
Okay, I got it. Okay, it gets a great picture there, Frank. Frank, the title of today's talk is Lessons from the Last Century. 16 months and 100 clients. And you have a reference to the last century. What is the in that context, why the last century? What do you mean by that?
There's two ways you can look at it, and two ways I meant it. I use century as a descriptive term to describe the last 100 clients we acquired and the lessons that we absorbed from how we got them. And also I use century as a descriptive term to represent a changeover from the past, as in that was last century. So there was everything that happened kind of before we began the Hibachi journey and that led us up to that point.
So part of the journey, there's as all of our journeys, there's transition points. So this 100, you know, was certainly a, and we'll get into some of that here certainly. You know, that was a key marker. That was a key marker, a key intention that was set, and then of course you've achieved that. Got it. Okay, now Frank, we got 11 lessons. We're going to go right into the first one, and lesson one, you title it as Necessity is the Mother of Invention. So lesson one, necessity is the mother of invention. And what do you mean by that? I mean, what is lesson one?
When this whole thing started for us, it was not my intention to acquire 100 clients. To give a little snapshot in time, this really all began at the IDEA conference in Alexandria in 2009. We were in the middle of just a perfect economic storm. Internally, we had some staff shakeup. The economy was in shambles. We had Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns disappearing. People were losing money. There was a lot of negative sentiment and a contraction in consumer spending on the outside. We had some internal turmoil, and I'm in Alexandria and I'm at this conference, and it just kind of hit me that we're in a lot of trouble. Something needs to be done, you know, to salvage our business because we were taking on water. And, you know, when the whole thing started, it wasn't a matter of I wanted to get clients. It would be nice to acquire clients. We needed to get clients. We had bills we needed to pay, loans that had to be paid back, rent, payroll. So what ended up happening was We went out to Hibachi on our last night down there, and I never let on any of this to our team. I'm smiling and you know, doing my thing every day, but this is in the back of my mind. And we went out to Hibachi on the last night down in Alexandria, and one or two of my guys down there, you know, said over dinner, "This is a lot of fun. We should do this again." So I said, "All right, listen." I said, "You know, every time we get 10 clients, we'll go out and celebrate. We'll go out for Hibachi." And we all agreed to it. So I kind of – that was the beginning of putting some teamwork together to it. But my original intention was to try to get 10 clients. You know, like I said, we had problems going on. And rather than try to focus on the problems, I started coming up with solutions. And the first solution that I came up with is we need to start getting clients. So this was kind of – how the whole thing originated.
Got it. Now, so it, you know, it becomes so you certainly established the need, a have to have, as opposed to a want or a nice to have. You know, this reminds me. There's a book that was out called Bounce by Keith McFarland, and it's called Bounce: The Art of Turning Tough Times into Triumphs. And in that book, he mentions something about being adaptable in the face of stress. And as far as I'm concerned, Frank, as a leader, that starts from the top. And you made the reference that you never made it seem dire. You never made it seem like this is, you know, hey, you know, we're hurting. We got to. And how did you personally do that? I mean, did you confide in close associates? Your mindset was, you know, obviously set a different way. How did you approach that personally in order to lead your team through this little, you know, downturn, if you will?
Well, I knew you can't inspire people unless you're inspired. So I knew that if I came in with that gloom and doom attitude, that would rub off. Like I said earlier, I'm a lead by example guy. So what I ultimately did was I decided to go all in. And, you know, we needed a set amount of money to buy us some time to weather the storm. and I decided to go all in on my own. What I did is I tapped into my own 401k, and, you know, I had a decision to make. I said, am I going to, you know, I'm fighting for my present, I'm fighting for my future, and my hard-earned money, who do I trust most with it? Do I want to continue to leave it in the people on Wall Street? Do I trust them with my future, or do I trust myself? And to use a sports analogy, with the game on the line and the game being my money, I wanted the ball. So I cashed in my 401k and reinvested that into the business. And it's kind of a little Cortez maneuver also. You know, I figured like I was burning my bridges. Like it, once that money was gone, there was no replacing it, so there was no going back. So it, not that I needed more motivation to make things work, but it definitely tightened the noose on me a little bit more to kind of fight a little bit harder.
Well.
And the other thing, Larry, I'll say this. Not that I felt that this was going to make the business better, but another thing I did was I signed up in the face of all of this going on. That's when I signed up for Ironman. It took me 22 years of fear and excuses saying I don't have the time, now's not the right time, I'm too busy. Well, now I figured, like, you know what? I feel like I potentially could lose a lot, so you know what? What have I got to – there's nothing to be fearful of anymore. So, that didn't have a direct impact on my business, but just to kind of put a time context to things, it was at that moment that I signed up for Ironman because I said, you know what? Now I'm going to do this as well.
Well, at that idea in Alexandria, did you connect with anybody down there?
Well, yeah, that's it's ironic how it all comes together, but that's actually when I really first connected with Todd, and I've mentioned this to other people in the past. You know, full disclosure, I met with Todd. I took the Going for Greatness workshop that he was doing down there. And that's when Todd talked about the idea of the mastermind group. And you know, and Todd basically came out and said, not verbatim, if you choose to join or get involved in this group, you will grow your business. Your business will grow next year. And again, I didn't want to grow my business. I wasn't thinking to myself, boy, it would be nice if we grew our business. We needed to grow our business. So I'm looking at it going, is this the solution to my problems? I need to grow my business. This guy's saying it's going to happen. And you know, hi, Todd Durkin. My name is Frank Pooker. You know, it's a pleasure to meet you. So, I mean, that's really how the whole thing came about with regard to Mastermind. I did not join the Mastermind group with the idea of connecting with like-minded souls and kindred spirits. I joined the Mastermind group because I'm thinking, Todd Durkin told me I'm going to grow my business next year, and so help me, I need to grow my business next year.
Well, hey, law of attraction sometimes, Frank. Right place, right time. You take action, you're down there, and you make some connections, and you plant a seed, and things start happening. Well, they don't start happening, you make them happen. Lesson two, Frank, if two are better than none, then six are better than one. If two are better than none, then six are better than one. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I get worked up and motivated pretty quickly. I'm a pretty motivated type of guy already. So once I committed to saying, like, all right, my money's on the line, we're getting clients, I'm going to start to change the way we approach certain things, for me to come into work with that kind of energy is good. That's a good first step. Now, if I'm able to kind of rally Francesca by my side and say, hey, Fran, listen, you know, you and me together going in there, working with our team of what was at that time six, you know, we could make a lot more headway working together. And then you start doing the math. You start thinking, like, what if I can get everybody involved? What if I can get everybody excited? What if I can get everybody in the same boat and everybody's rowing to the same shoreline? It's a lot easier for six people to row that boat in one direction than for one person to be doing it with five others sitting there on their hands thinking, we're not really sure about this. So the concept of Hibachi and making that a team project, something that we all worked on, because, again, this wasn't Frank trying to get 10 clients. This was the team at Fitness One-to-One trying to acquire those 10 clients. So we're all going to work towards this, and we're all going to celebrate in our collective success.
Well, now, you know, I'm really looking at that, and it's really, really interesting to me, you know, when a person takes an approach, you know, certainly you as a leader, that, you know I can't do this alone. I've got six people here. I'm setting this course. I've got the people on the bus. Everybody's in the boat, you know, rowing. And you talk about a team, and that leads really to the next one, to your next lesson, building a great team. It's one thing to have people there. How do you build a great team, Frank? And that's lesson number three. You say build a great team. How do you do that?
It's not as easy as you would think. I mean, it took me, the truth of the matter is, again, if you go back to, you do the math and you say, well, I purchased the business in 1998, and I will say this, in 2010, this is the best team that we've ever had. And I'm not saying that because all these guys may listen to this recording tomorrow, but the reality is I know that to be true. And the way we did that was we needed to kind of, you know, burn the treehouse down and start over again. We had, you know, over the years, we were always kind of interchanging pieces, always redoing the cake recipe, if you will. And I thought at one point we kind of had it just right, but, you know, I was wrong. We make mistakes. And what I realized was that the way I was going to develop the best team is I had to kind of grow them. I had to do it a little bit more organically. And we tried to bring in some experienced trainers, but the problem with that is they're very set in their ways. They're not as likely to adapt to a philosophy, a style, or an approach to the way we do things. So what I did was I started just bringing on young, fresh trainers. I started going to colleges and looking for bright interns and bringing them up that way and kind of grooming them. They were much more humble. They were all very hungry, willing to learn. And, you know, we grew our ideal employees as opposed to hoping to find them.
Interesting. Now, Frank, so you went to a source that people were fresh, humble, hungry. You bring them on as employees, correct? They're not as independent contractors. And I know, you know, some facilities might be a lot of business owners out there that use ICs, and we're not going to get into the details of that. But I just want to be sure everybody knows that at one-to-one you have employees. So, you know, basically you shaped a common purpose. You know, you agree or basically set performance goals. You define a working approach. You develop high levels of complementary skills. You hold each other mutually accountable. And you find that having employees and you as leader in an environment that's supportive and there's a strong, strong need to get more clients, and you got this team built, and now what do you do? It leads to lesson number four. You need to sell why they, meaning the customers, are buying, and then you have solutions. Sell why they, meaning the clients or customers, are buying solutions. And what does lesson four say, Frank?
That's this is something that we could talk about for way too long, so I'll make it very quick. What I learned is the reason people buy is not the reason we think it is. People don't buy from us because they like us. Mm-hmm. People don't buy from us because we're priced right, okay? People continue to buy from us because they like us, and they continue to buy from us because the service we provide is of value based on the price we charge, in their opinion. They feel they're getting value at that price from what we do for them. But the reason people buy in a service environment is people have problems and they're looking to buy solutions. And here's a great example. When you wake up at 3:00 in the morning and you hear water coming from your kitchen and your sink is spewing water all over the kitchen, the first thing you do is run to the Yellow Pages, okay? And you look for the biggest ad that says 24-hour help. And that's what you call. You don't start looking through going, let me see, who's the cheapest? Let me see how much they'll charge. You know, I wonder if this guy's a nice guy. It's you have a problem. You're looking for a solution, and the reason that's relevant in our industry, Larry, is because what people sell in fitness, in the personal training industry, everybody's looking to sell the same thing. Everybody's selling weight loss. Everybody's selling six-week programs, bathing suit season, New Year's resolution. It's my contention that we don't have an epidemic in this country of people that aren't bathing suit ready. We have an epidemic in this country of people that are on medication, people who are unhealthy. People have primary risk factors, heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, elevated cholesterol levels, back pain. So what we started doing is we started changing what we were selling. It differentiated us. You know, you go down all these personal training places, and everybody's like, lose weight, get buff, get ripped. And we're advertising. We're saying, feel better. Programs for blood pressure, high cholesterol, back pain. You won't just feel better. You'll be better. Fitness one-to-one, personal training. We started selling solutions to the problems that people were having. And I got news for you. There's more people in this country, okay, that are concerned about their blood pressure, or at least should be, their blood pressure, their back pain, and those sort of things, than they are about, getting into their skinny jeans. Now, There's no offense to people running skinny jean programs, but based on our clientele, based on our demographics and our area, it's just not what's resonating with people. And we've talked before. We've said feedback is the breakfast of champions. We've surveyed our clientele. We've said to them, on a scale of 1 to 10, rank what you're here for, what's important to you. Nobody mentioned, not nobody, but the majority of them, it wasn't fat loss or weight loss. It was an awful lot of general health, feeling better, stress reduction, pain relief. So I wanted to sell what people are buying. Why sell a skinny jeans program to a bunch of 50 and 60-year-olds that don't care about that? My attitude was, and I never said this, is, let's stop selling bathing suit season and let's start selling the next three decades of your life season.
Now, that's really differentiating yourself from others out there, okay? And then I love your brand creed, through positive energy and proper exercise, you won't just feel better, you'll be better. That's powerful. Through positive energy and proper exercise, you won't just feel better, you'll be better. And then you guys constantly strengthen that brand motto by creating something special, okay? And so you're just not offering a commodity, which is just based on price. You're offering an experience, specific benefits, solutions to prospective customers, clients, and the people that need your help. Okay, Frank, I got that. And that's the approach. You differentiate yourself. You handle it that way. Now, number five is you've got people coming in. You're doing hibachi tens. Take me at least through lesson number four. As you start getting let's go through lesson five, then I'm going to make that comment. Use momentum. Lesson number five, you say use momentum. And what do you mean by momentum?
Very often when people come into our facility, the first thing that they'll say is, wow, this is really nice. This isn't what I expected. Because it doesn't look like your typical gym. I mean, yes, we have treadmills and arcs and rowers and dumbbells and medicine balls and all of that fun stuff. But it's very clean. It's very inviting. We have fresh-cut flowers at the front desk. Francesca's sitting up there. It's a very professional-looking atmosphere, very non-intimidating. So people walk in, and somebody that has, again, back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, any pain, might be very apprehensive about working with a personal trainer or working on an exercise program. But they come into our facility, and all of a sudden they're relaxed. They recognize that they're going to be cared for. And inevitably, they just can't help but blurt out, my husband should do this. Or my mother should do this. My father should come here. So rather than just nod and say, okay, that's nice, we use momentum. We say, I tell you what, Larry, when we're done, I'm going to give you a gift certificate to give to your husband, to give to your wife. And you know what? If they're interested, I'll give them a free evaluation, and I'll give them 2 free sessions. If they like it, great. But if not, you know what? At least I'll have a much better understanding of how they should be exercising, and they'll be able to take better care of themselves. I mean, it's a no-brainer, but you've got to use that momentum. You've got to, you know, don't just let that opportunity pass. You're not being pushy. They're bringing it up. They're the ones mentioning that somebody would find value or benefit in this. So all we do is just make it easy for them to refer people to us.
Well, and so that's having a system in place, obviously a program. I don't want to call it a program. A system in place to use the momentum of a customer, client, valued member, et cetera, and, again, providing a solution to maybe something, you know, somebody close to them is looking for. Now, there's one other kind of momentum, Frank. You were voted actually by New Jersey Monthly Magazine as the best personal training studio in New Jersey. And without getting into a lot of marketing specifics, how did you use the momentum of that award, if you will, to your advantage?
Well, a couple of things. Obviously, in any print media that we send out, that goes up there. And that's powerful. We just put right up there, you know, named, quote, Best Exercise Studio. That was the actual award. Best Exercise Studio by New Jersey Monthly Magazine. So that goes right on top of any print media that we sent out there. But we use that we leverage our email signature with that. It goes on the bottom of our billing invoices, on our thank you letters. It goes out on everything. So, I mean, that's kind of how we use that, and that's powerful. And other companies do the same things. If you're familiar with the real estate company RE/MAX, their tagline is, nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, period. So, my play on that is, at Fitness One-to-One, again, like, you won't just feel better, you'll be better, come experience New Jersey's best exercise studio with a complimentary fitness evaluation, 2 free training sessions. But we try to use that, you know, in everything that we do. I just feel it's a powerful statement to say that, you know, named best exercise studio.
Great. Now, the last thing on momentum, because I'm curious and I want to picture myself. I'm at Hibachi 30 or Hibachi 40. So you've gotten 40 new clients as you're getting, quote, momentum, and you're getting more clients at Fitness One-to-One. What is the momentum at Hibachi at your dinners? Did you feel the momentum building over time? Did you use that? What's the vibe there? What was the vibe?
At about 30, it's funny you should use that number, because probably once we got to 10, it was like, okay, that was nice. But once we got to 30, 30 and 40 came very quickly. Prior to us beginning this, we would usually acquire maybe 2 or 3 clients a month. Once we started Hibachi, for whatever reason, we started acquiring 5, 6, 7 clients a month. So we had doubled the amount of clients that were coming in the door. And when we went from 20 to 30, 40, very quick, this all happened within about a 7 or 8 week period. So we were kind of a little giddy, a little excited, and we were also starting to look around saying, like, man, like, we're going to be at 50 soon. And then we weren't even really talking about 100 until we crossed the 50 threshold. But I think everybody on our team at that point was really getting excited about what was going on, because, again, that meant clients for them as well.
Absolutely. Now, and that leads perfectly a great segue into lesson number 6, because there's probably people on the call right now that say, well, why? How did this happen? Lesson number 6, focus on the little things always and all day. Lesson 6, focus on the little things always and all day. So, Frank, give me a snapshot. What do you mean by that? And this is a big one, I think.
We weren't swinging for the fences every day. Everybody is looking for that home run swing. Like, what's that ad that we could place that's going to get that telephone to ring? Or, you know, what's the new website design we could lay out? You know, I've talked about this. It's not about the font on your business card or the color of your brochure. All that's irrelevant. It's not the big things that lead to great results. You've got to turn small steps into great feats. So focusing on the little things, was we focused every day. Todd would say, win the day. You know, we wanted to win the little victories. You know, what could we do that would – little things that would make big differences? Could we get to the phone a little quicker? Could we return phone calls a little faster? Could, if there's a little ambiguity, could we confirm an appointment as opposed to saying, ah, we'll see what happens? Could we keep the equipment a little bit cleaner? Could we look a little sharper? You know, could we make sure that the things are put away? You know, let's do all of those little things. Increase the number of hellos, the number of good mornings, great job todays. And I don't mean be disingenuous, Larry, because people will sense that. But, you know, can we just get better at job one? Stop focusing on, you know, you can't, if you're worried about doing the big thing and you're neglecting the small things, it'll never work. You know, it's whether it's in fitness, training, business, raising a family, whatever, it always comes down to the fundamentals, which goes back to the definition of greatness, okay? It's the consistent performance of the fundamentals. So we became a great facility by just returning to doing the little things consistently.
Well, so if I'm hearing you right on this one, Frank, at one-to-one, the culture, your organization, your processes, your systems, focusing on the little things, which is a strategy, and basically to basically satisfy, delight the customer, delight the client, create a great experience in a great, clean, and professional environment. And the reality, the cost of doing that is actually comes out to very little, relatively inexpensive when compared to the cumulative impact that it makes. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, you know, people are looking for, you know, people are looking for that home run swing in terms of, you know, what program can we do or what catchy advertising slogan, you know, can we put out there, usually at expense to try to acquire clients. But if you're not taking care of the clients you have, you're not going to get new ones.
Wow. Number seven, Frank, that leads us to remove the risk. Number seven, remove the risk. And, you know, we could probably, you know, spend a little bit of time on this one, but what risk are we talking about? And vis-a-vis the client, vis-a-vis the customer, remove the risk.
We keep the whole process very simple. We don't make sales, okay? We make people better. We're this, you know, so this isn't a use. This isn't a car dealership, you know, where people have to go talk to the manager and see what we can do. We don't sell packages, 10, 20, 30. We sell 10 sessions, 10 30-minute sessions, 10 50-minute sessions. We keep it simple. The focus is on the personal training. It's developing, a relationship with people and finding out what's going to make this person happy, what's going to make this person feel better when they walk out the door from when they walked in. So the way we remove the risk is we make it a stress-free process. I say, Larry, listen, here's what I'd like you to do. Come in for a complimentary evaluation because everybody needs to go through that first, and we explain what our evaluation is about. After that, take two personal training. You've never worked with a personal trainer before? Great. You know what? I'm going to set you up with one of my guys or one of my girls, and I'm going to give you two personal training sessions with them. After that, come back and talk to me. If you like it, Larry, we'd love to work with you. If not, like I mentioned earlier, at least you have a much better understanding of the type of program you should be doing, should you continue to do this on your own or elsewhere, and you'll have a much better understanding of the type of service and the type of facility we have here. And you know what, Larry? When people come into our facility and they come in for an evaluation and we get an understanding of them and we introduce what we can do for them and how we can possibly help them, and we take an interest in them, and we lay out an appropriate program for them by strengthening what's weak, stretching what's tight, and injecting some positive energy into their lives, our ability to convert those people into clients is very high. I mean, probably 90%. I don't have hard data on that, but 9 out of 10 people that come in for an evaluation and take two personal training sessions become clients. So we remove the risk in terms of commitment. We remove the risk in terms of money. And it just – we set the tone for them that this is a very relaxed atmosphere where the focus is on the training, not on the contract and the financial commitment of it.
Interesting. So, you know, really this is kind of like the practice – you know, you're really practicing a lot of ways, the art of connecting. Kind of reminds me a lot of Thomas Plummer's mantras where he says, to know me is to love me. So you're actually taking the risk out. You're getting your world-class people in front of prospective clients, trying to risk-free, giving them a great experience, you know, like, again, assessing the person personally, and then voila, you know, after a couple of sessions, they love us. A couple of procedural things on this, Frank, as business owners, some people might have this question. Do your trainers get compensated for the time to do the two free personal training sessions?
Yes. And you know, people may say, like, well, how do you do that? Look at it this way. Let's go simple math. Let's say a trainer receives 50%. Let's use very easy math. Let's say you're charging $70 an hour. That means you're paying a trainer, let's say, when all is said and done, the cost, $35. It's costing you $105 to compensate that trainer, approximately.
Right.
But 9 out of 10 people that do that will sign up. So would you spend $105 so that somebody would turn around and pay you $750, okay, and continue with that for 5 to 10 years?
Good ROI.
The only way, you know, Larry, if you know, would you give me $100 if I'm going to turn around and give you $750?
Sure.
And the only way that you're paying the trainer that money is if that person is coming in. And if you've got a client, again, most people are referrals, so they already know the cost. They already have a sense of what we're about. You know, we've done the evaluation on them. They understand our facility. If you've got somebody that comes into the facility 3 times, and as a trainer, you've got your hands on them, that is 3 times that you've got the opportunity to connect with that person and convince that person that their time and money might be well invested with you. If you can't do that, you know, repeatedly enough, you may have a problem. But the reality is, like I said, 9 out of 10 of those people sign up. So I don't view it as an expense. I view it as an investment.
Yeah. That is, I think, a key approach because, you know, I have found, too, in the compensation, too, with working with younger trainers, I just think it's a certain mindset, too, when they are getting compensated and, you know, there's just that little extra they'll put in to do that. You know, Frank, lesson number 8, the next lesson is it's a simple one yet profound at the same way, and I want to actually – tell the lesson and also add a statement here, which I was very impressed with. Lesson number 8, be great at what you do. Be great at what you do, okay? And then I love your statement here. Give them something they can't do and won't do without you. And I want to repeat that. Give them, in this case, the customer or client, something they can't do and won't do without you. Could you put all that in perspective, Frank, please?
Let me clarify that. It's not that I'm trying to overcomplicate their workout so that they're fearful of doing something without me. Mm-hmm. What I mean by give them something they can't do and won't do without you, every one of us as personal trainers has had a client say to us, well, I don't need to pay you to watch me walk on the treadmill or ride the bike. Mm-hmm. And my response is, I agree. To be honest, I find it quite boring just watching you walk on the treadmill. But what I mean by give them something, what we did 2 years ago is we made a fundamental decision to completely change. We got rid of all of our selectorized equipment, all of it. No lat pull down, no leg extension, leg curl, whatever. And I'm not even going to get into hip flex and isolation, you know, linear plane crap.
Right.
But what we did was we moved away from that in lieu of getting these people to move their bodies in ways that were actually going to make them better, that were actually beneficial for them, getting them squatting, lunging, stepping, pushing sleds, picking things up off the floor, pulling bands, using body weight. I don't want to use the term functional training because it's overused. It should just be training. But the reality is, people won't do those things on their own. But people will go to a gym and they'll go sit on the leg extension, go to the leg press, the leg curl, and you see that. If you go to we're not a gym. We're a personal training studio. So why am I trying to compete with a big gym? I can't compete with a guy that's got 5 leg press machines. So we don't have any because our competitive advantage is our, quote, personal training is better than the personal training you're getting there because the personal trainers at those places will just find it a lot easier to go sit by that leg extension and count to 10. And I have to think to myself, like, I mean, do I really need to hold multiple certifications and attend continuing educational conferences so I can count to 10? Three more, two more, one more. All right, great job. Now let's go next door to the leg curl. Lie down. I mean, there's no mystery in that. So that's not great personal training in my book. And again, the machines, great for hypertrophy, but nobody comes in saying they want to be a bodybuilder. And if you want to be a bodybuilder, you know, we could do hypertrophy training, but we're not using the machines. So I want to give them something they can't do because that's our competitive advantage over a trainer at a Gold's Gym, a World's Gym, a New York Sport Club, that sort of thing. And that's why our training is better, because we actually develop a personal approach to the client as opposed to putting a client on a machine where the machine is one size fits all. 400 pounds or 100 pounds. That leg extension machine, same biomechanics.
Now, Frank, there's another point of this I want to ask you. So I'm envisioning here, there's challenge, there's hard work, there's variety, there's excitement, there's fun at your sessions at one-to-one. And there's the exercise element, there's the physical element. Now, you hit on a key point. In your personal training studio, and I don't know what percentage of your clients or customers are just one-to-one clients. Your fitness one-to-one, I hate to make assumptions. I'm sure it's pretty high that, you know, you have a high percentage doing either partner or one-to-one at fitness one-to-one. Now, be great is also the mental connection, okay, spiritual connection, emotional connection to the client, the follow-up. What else am I getting at one-to-one? What are the trainers at one-to-one doing? What's Frank Pucha doing other than the exercise stuff, which is great, it's world-class, that's making that person come back and saying, you know what, I had a challenging workout, and you know what, I'm sending Frank an email tonight and sending him a quote because I read it out of this book about how to be great. What else are you guys doing, Frank, and then some, other than the physical part of the session?
It's not about the push-ups and the sit-ups. The program design, I'm going to be careful with my words here, but the program design is almost, underlined, almost irrelevant. It's about the experience that the client has, the experience that we give to them. Plus, we do the little things. This goes back to what we talked about earlier. We remember their birthdays. We remember their anniversaries. Little things. Somebody had an operation, you had your knee operated on, we send them a gift basket. It's your birthday. If you come in, on your birthday, you get a free training session today. And we don't make that our standard policy because then it doesn't seem special. But when they walk in and the trainer tells them that, it's a wow factor. You know, we get involved with our clients. We attend their functions. Somebody much smarter than me said this recently, and I don't remember who it was, but they said, if something is important to someone who's important to you, that something should be important to you. And, you know, the lesson in that is remember details about your clients. We call them, welcome back from your vacation. How was your trip to Italy? Have a nice trip. How was your kid's birthday party? Congratulations on your daughter's wedding. Congratulations on your first grade. Those little things. Again, it's personal training. Yes, the training is important. The push-ups and the sit-ups that's the mechanical aspect of what we do. But it's personal training. And I think a lot of people don't get that. I don't want to elaborate, but some people would say, you're getting too personal with your clients. It's the first word in my job title.
Mm-hmm.
Job one, it's it is personal.
Very powerful, Frank. Very powerful. And it's certainly, you have to look at that whole context of what personal training is. You guys certainly do that there. I know as part of the evolution, Frank, of Abachi 100, Lesson 9 says, plant a seed and watch it grow. And I know there's a little bit of story behind this one, but I think the metaphor is appropriate. If you can kind of just describe that and give us the Cliff Notes version of plant a seed and watch it grow.
Last fall, so maybe like 10 months ago, we were moving through our hibachi numbers, but it just wasn't happening at a rate that in my mind I felt was fast enough. And I'm getting frustrated. I'm thinking to myself, I'm reading the books. I'm, you know, I'm high-fiving people. I'm sending emails and texting them and calling them on their birthday. And I don't understand why our phone isn't ringing off the hook. Yeah, we're getting clients, but we should have, like, a boom. And the boom just wasn't there. So, I made a call to our friend down in Red Bank, and I said to him, I said, listen, I'm getting frustrated. What wisdom can you impart upon me? And he says to me, go to Home Depot and buy some plant seeds. And I'm writing this down, thinking he's going to give me some secret recipe on plant seeds. I'll go with it. And, potting soil and a 6-inch pot. And he said, pour some water on it, put it by a window, and just leave it alone. And, that's when I stopped writing. And he said to me, he goes, every day come downstairs and talk to the soil and say to the soil, I'm doing all the right things. I'm giving you water. I'm talking to you every day. You're getting sunlight. When are you going to show me something? So I didn't do that every day, but I did it more often than I probably would have had he not said it. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, all of a sudden, some grass started to sprout through the soil. And then we had a stem popped up, and eventually what emerged was a flower from the soil. And the metaphor really is growing a business, growing a plant, whatever, raising kids. The best things in life take time. Nothing happens overnight. And you just need to continue what we mentioned earlier, the fundamentals. Make sure that the environment to success is proper. Give your business some sunlight, give it some energy, give it some nourishment, and eventually you'll get what you're looking for. And ironically, the growth of the plant kind of coincided with the boom that started to occur in our business, because November, December rolled around and things started picking up. And now we schedule 1 or 2 evaluations every single week. We just signed up another client today. So it's kind of funny how, a very simple metaphor like that has a lot of implications, I think, not only in business but in relationships, life, et cetera.
So you found that exercise or that habit or that action that you took there helped you focus on the journey and the process you were going through at 1-to-1.
I think it gave me, it taught me, and I probably mentioned this earlier, it taught me maybe some patience that I needed to work on. I'm a go, go, go guy, but sometimes you need to step back and, let the path that you are traveling, continue.
Well, Frank, that leads us to number 10, get lucky. Get lucky. And I love something about this, and I'm going to let you expand on it. Luck equals opportunity plus preparation. So lesson number 10, need to get lucky, but luck equals opportunity plus preparation. If you could comment on that.
I think many people listening to the call have a similar definition. There is no such thing as luck. Here's where that came from. Two quick stories. Fran went out for a manicure on a Saturday months ago and walked in and ran into an old client, somebody who worked with one of our previous trainers. Fran had not seen this woman, had never trained this woman, and hadn't seen her in probably 6 or 7 years. But they exchanged their pleasantries, and Fran, rather than just saying, all right, it was nice to see you, she, took an interest. How are you? What are you doing? What's going on? And the woman said, things are okay, but my back's been bothering me. So Fran said, well, what are you doing? The woman said, well, I tried physical therapy, I tried this, but, nothing seems to work. Francesca says to her, have you ever tried Pilates? She says, no. Fran said, listen, she says, I'm a Pilates instructor as well as a trainer now, and I'd love to maybe, put you through a session and see if you find some relief with that. The woman says to Francesca, do you have your business card? And Francesca said, yes. So there's the preparation aspect right there, because how many of us walk out there, and how many of us have ever been asked if we have a business card and don't?
Mm.
So Fran gave the woman her business card. the woman called, came in, loved the Pilates session. She's been a client ever since. That's been months. Quick continuance on that story. The woman owns a women's boutique in a town not too far from here. And a couple times a year, Fran will go into the store and buy some, buy some shoes or pocketbooks or whatever. And she just loves the store. The clothes fit her well, and she enjoys going into the place. Well, she went in there a couple of weeks ago, and the woman said to her, my dog isn't doing well, and we have to put the dog down, and so Fran said, I'm sorry, Fran and I are dog people, Fran could sympathize. A couple of weeks later, the woman comes in, and Fran and her are talking. The woman says that she's going to rescue a dog. So that weekend, Fran and I went out and bought the dog a dog toy and some dog biscuits. The woman comes in on Monday from the weekend. Fran and her have their workout. Fran says, I've got something for you at the front desk. We go up to the front desk, and Fran gives her a card, welcome to your new edition, welcome to the new edition, and gave her the dog toy and the biscuits. Well, the woman, lost her mind. The woman's got tears in her eyes. She goes, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. That's wonderful. It wasn't a calculated decision, but, if you witnessed it, you couldn't help but think, that's a lifetime client right there. That's a game-changing move. You talk about the home run swing. Really, it's the fundamentals, Larry. It's just taking care of your people and remembering what's important, but it was also a home run swing. But here's the good luck from it now. The woman goes home, and could not stop talking about the fact that her Pilates instructor went out and bought her brand-new dog, a dog toy. The woman's sister-in-law called the next week to schedule Pilates sessions. So is it good luck, or is it just a little bit of preparation and some opportunity where the woman who called was looking for an instructor? So I think that we make our own luck through a little bit of thought, a little bit of preparation. People say right place, right time. You've got to take some action. And the other quick story with the good luck was, several weeks ago, my new guy, Jeff, answers the phone. A woman, Joanne, calls up, says she lives in the area, she knows where we're located, she wanted some information. Jeff speaks to her on the phone, and she said, okay. She goes, I'm going to stop by sometime today. Jeff says, fine. No, definitive time and no knowledge of mm-hmm. this woman was actually going to show up. Later that afternoon, Jeff decides to walk out to get something from his car, and we have a pretty busy lobby. I mean, it's like I said, it's a professional building, so there's always people coming and going. And as Jeff's walking through the parking lot, there's a woman walking into the building with a little bit of a look on her face, like she wasn't 100% certain where she was going. And rather than just continue on his path, walking to his car, he stops her and says, ma'am, can I help you? So she looks at Jeff with his Fitness 1-to-1 shirt on and says, are you Jeff? He says, yes, I am. She replies, I'm looking for you. I'm Joanne. Who do you think that she's training with today? Now,
sounds like Jeff's got himself a client.
Jeff could have just continued through the parking lot, and she would have came in and possibly scheduled with somebody else. But, the fact is that, he saw an opportunity to help somebody that looked like they were in need. So people would say, wow, that was good luck. Imagine if you didn't see her. Imagine if she walked by and spoke to somebody else. So, that's really where, get lucky comes from. Sometimes the best way to get lucky is just to take action and do the right thing.
Absolutely. It reminds me of a quote of Coach John R. Wooden, in my book, The Greatest Coach Ever, recently deceased. But Wooden always said the time to prepare isn't after you've been given the opportunity. It's long before the opportunity arises. Once the opportunity arrives, it's too late to prepare. So there's a lot of wisdom there, and it sounds like you guys are doing that. And also the comment I would make is you guys are good at reading people, and that comes through training. That comes through reading people and responding and looking at them and paying attention. And I think when you do that, certainly you have your preparation in your hip pocket, but that comes from doing that on a daily basis too. Frank, number 11, and this is the final. And then some, use the law of attraction. Lesson 11, and then some, use the law of attraction. And what's that last lesson about?
I referenced the journal you gave me about 10 months ago, and every day what I would do was write out just some goals for the next day. And every day I would write out, you know, at the top of my list, 200 sessions weekly, you know, X amount of dollars monthly in revenue, get new client tomorrow. And that was always in the top two or three. You know, in my house, you know, we have a dry erase board in our kitchen, and I would write things down, you know, X amount of sessions this week. And I have them written down all over the place, and so that my mind is always focused on them. So I believe that the act of writing things out, I can't explain the law of metaphysics, but I just believe, or rather I know, that it's a powerful force that has enabled us to get to where we needed to go a lot faster than if we simply just talked about it. And I think that even our Hibachi 10 board, we have it in the trainer's office, and as recently as today, we've acquired a new client. We wrote down Hibachi number 6, and we dated it so that even our team is looking at it. And maybe not on the same level that I am, but on some level, they're thinking about it. I may be obsessing about it a little bit more, but they're certainly at least looking at it, and it's got some awareness in their conscious and subconscious.
Go ahead to finish out if you need to.
I will say that not everyone, we've talked about this, that's not something that everybody believes in. But my final statement on that is if I believe it works, then it works for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, Frank, it's kind of come full circle here, and I'm going to close with two things here today. And you kind of already referenced it a little bit. You know, you kind of met Todd down at that Virginia Idea meeting. You affiliated and committed to the Todd Durkin Mastermind Group. Could you share some thoughts on how that action of joining that impacted some of what we discussed today?
Everything everything that I've spoken of has a constant theme, and that theme was we took action. I'm not saying we wouldn't have gotten here without my participation in Mastermind. I'm not saying we wouldn't have gotten here without me connecting with Todd and you and everybody else. But I know that I took a lot more action as a result of connecting with you guys. And I think by, you know, speaking and meeting with other people from around the country, sharing stories of success and struggle, you know, something, and I think that everybody, you know, should remember this point. If you want to be successful, you need to be comfortable with the idea of failure. You need to take action. Sometimes things don't work out, but you need to take action. We took massive action over the last 16 months on a lot of areas, and, you know, in the end, I'd say that that's the biggest thing that my involvement in the Mastermind Group has led me to, is I've certainly gotten a lot more done and tried a lot more things than I probably would have if I, you know, was still going it my own.
Well, Frank, I have to commend you on all this great work at Fitness One-to-One, for taking the time to share it with certainly all our Mastermind teammates, and for a lot of fitness professionals at large. I think this call, you know, it's been recorded, so we're, you know, we could certainly listen into it for a lot of people as a reference call. And I'm going to ask you one last thing. You planted the Hibachi 100 seed, and maybe you're going to plant another one at Fitness One-to-One. Where is Fitness One-to-One going in the future? I don't need a detailed five-year plan. Where do you see it going to get better? And then I'm just going to ask you one last thing. and then we're going to wrap it up for today. So where's Fitness 1-to-1 going from here, Frank? What's the next seed you're planting?
Personally, I see myself starting to – I will continue to train a small number of clients and a handful of athletes. I see myself transitioning to more of a coach of the next generation of fitness professionals. I think that I see a lot of young fitness trainers struggling, and it's not because they don't have enough information or they don't have enough abdominal exercises. I think they're losing sight of the personal side of our business. I see myself, it's not clearly defined yet, but having some role in that. As far as the business goes, I think the next thing that we will probably get into will be some sort of duet or semi-private training. I think that there is a, again, I think that there's a need for it. I think it's the solution to some people's problems. And whether it's bringing couples or, siblings together in a physical social environment, or even satisfying people that maybe have financial concerns with traditional one-on-one training. That'll be the next thing that we'll get involved in. I see us potentially down the road getting involved in being some sort of educational facility where we tag on to my concept of helping the next generation of fitness professional evolve. But I see a lot of that happening, Larry, truthfully, in the next 3 to 5 years. I don't really look too much further down the pike from that. Unfortunately, that's just not the kind of person I am. Like I mentioned very early, I'm more reflective than a planner, and that's probably a bad thing, but that's just who I am. So, And the industry changes so much, and things are always evolving so quickly that, I probably have no idea of what I'm going to be doing 6 or 7 years from now. But I know that will certainly be a part of what I'm doing because it's just who I am.
Frank, wonderful. Lessons from the last century, 16 months and 100 clients, shared by teammate Todd Durkin, mastermind teammate and business owner, and creative, energetic, optimist Frank Kuchar of Fitness 1-to-1. Frank, you're blessed with many, many gifts. Continue to use them. You've shared your greatness today. You shine your light. We do appreciate it. It's been a pleasure, and I can tell you from a personal point of view, we've all learned a lot from you just being in the TD coaching group, and it's just been a real exciting time, I think, for all of us to be in this industry. And I want to leave you one quote, and I don't want to say a mentor of mine, somebody I've respected many, many years, and we've talked about a need and what we've had to do, what you had to do for your business, Roger Staubach, the NFL Hall of Famer, and actually very, very successful real estate person, sold his business for $200-some million a couple of years back, has a quote, "Adversity reveals genius, and prosperity conceals it." And sometimes adversity does reveal genius, Frank, and I think what you did with Hibachi 100 was genius in the context that you described it, and I really, really appreciate your time today.
Larry, thank you very much for the opportunity. It's my pleasure, and, likewise, the last year and a half, 2 years, getting to know you, I am not a religious man, but I am very blessed to have had you come into my life. So thank you very much for all you continue to do.
Frank, great call today. And we went a little overtime, as Todd would say, but time well spent. And I think lessons well stated and learned. Okay? So for the TD Mastermind Coaching Group today, it's August 18th, 2010. We have concluded our 11 lessons for the day from the last century, 16 months and 100 clients with Frank Kuchar here. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in or for listening in, and create a great, great day. We'll see you.